Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello. Hi there. My name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Thank you so much for being here with me today on Residue. As you know, on Residue, we talk about the truth behind your favorite movies. And today, we are going to be discussing the Lifetime movie, Taken in Broad Daylight, starring everybody's favorite WB character, Dawson James Vanderbeek. Okay, let's get the small talk out of the way before we get into it. As you know, Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne, and you can find me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, TikTok, Residue A True Crime Podcast, and Facebook, Residue A True Crime Podcast. And just as a little secret, you guys, I'm setting up my Patreon right now, so you will be hearing about that very soon. And don't forget that the best thing you can do if you want to help out the podcast is leave a 5-star review. And I wanted to let you guys know, and I have been sending a lot of stickers out, but I still have some stickers and thank you notes. So if you have left me a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, whatever, get a hold of me on social media and tell me where to send you some cute little stickers. And I thank you so much. And I also love it when you guys leave Spotify comments. Okay, wait, I'm so sorry. I know some people hate it. I don't really care. Shadow dancing, baby, you do it right. Uh-huh. If you didn't know, I'm like the biggest Andy Gibb fan. I love that dude. But yeah, I don't know why the singing should remind you to follow me. It's just fun, I guess, because I'm about to talk about some heavy shit in all of these episodes. And I don't know, singing it out for a minute gets me ready, gets me pumped. I'm also hoping you're going to be singing Andy Gibb for the rest of the day. And maybe you'll remember to hit that follow button. I don't know. In my mind, it works. Okay, here we go. We are about to talk about a badass chick. Her name is Anne Saluti. And as you guys know, listener discretion is always advised. Taken in Broad Daylight is a 2009 made-for-television film. This is a true story, and this film recounts the abduction of a 17-year-old girl named Anne Saluti from a mall parking lot in Nebraska. And over 6 harrowing days, she is taken across state lines by a man named Tony Zappa. And this man is played by James Vanderbeek. And Anne must use every ounce of her resourcefulness and strength to survive this ordeal. So she leaves clues and negotiates with her captor. Sarah Canning plays Anne Saluti, and LeVar Burton is Mike Timbrook. The writers of this movie are Charlene Blaine and Kim Delgado. Okay, so you guys remember the movie No One Would Tell, the Amy Carnevale story, and I covered that one. It's a few eppies back if you want to go back and check it out. But remember when Fred Savage played the really awful boyfriend of Candace Cameron in that movie, and we all couldn't even believe that Fred Savage was acting that way, our little Kevin Arnold? Well, this is the same situation, because you're watching Dawson, you're sitting here watching James Vanderbeek, and you're like, what the hell, James? He's such an asshole in this movie, and it's scary. Okay, so wait, if I had a co-host, I would be asking this question right now, but I like to think of this as, you guys are my co-host. I'm talking to my co-host right now. Can you tell me if I should keep watching Dawson's Creek? Because it's on Netflix now, and I just started watching it for the first time. I've only gotten to about episode 4, and I cannot understand this storyline with 15-year-old Pacey and his bowl cut trying to have some kind of relationship with his somewhat, I believe, in her 40s teacher. What is going on with that storyline? It's grossing me out. Okay, back to the movie. Yeah, James Vanderbeek plays the hell out of this role, and so does Sarah Canning. Okay, let's get to some Letterboxd reviews. So, this one is from a user named Tinker Buff. This girl literally had to survive this maniac and do 90% of the police work for this fucking hot dog squad. I can't. Extremely intense movie with very solid acting, especially from our leads, Sarah Canning and James Vanderbeek. Also, LeVar Reading Rainbow Burton is the lead detective. I had no idea about any of this going in and was extremely surprised by not only the quality, but the fact that it's a true story. The soundtrack needs a lot of work, but that's kind of my only critique. LOL. I'm going to get some merch that says Hot Dog Squad. Fucking Hot Dog Squad. User Randy Love wrote, as a fan of Dawson's Creek, there's no world where I could buy James Vanderbeek as the bad guy. And then we have another review from a user named Victoria. God, the old Lifetime movies are so much better. It is insane. This is a horrifying story. Exactly, Victoria. We love a good Lifetime movie around here. At 17 years old, Anne Slutty was athletic. She was a great student, straight A's across the board. She grew up in the Midwest and she had no enemies. I mean, Anne was the most likable girl. Her mom, Elaine, added that Anne's concerned about others. She doesn't say anything mean about people or anything. She's just a nice person, but she is not wishy-washy. And Anne's logic and strength is part of what saved her life. On April 6th, 2001, around 7 p.m., Anne Slutty went to the Hilltop Mall in Kearney, Nebraska. She wanted to go buy a brand new CD that just came out, and then she was going to go meet up with some friends. But as Anne approached her vehicle in the mall parking lot, a man comes up behind her, grabs her, points a gun at her, and tells her to get into his blue Suburban. And this is parked directly next to her car. So he grabs her, he's pushing her into the driver's side of the Suburban, but she slides right across the seat and she gets out the passenger side and she starts running for it. She is screaming for her life. She is begging for help. Many people are watching this. Everybody starts calling 911. Nobody approached the two of them to offer any help, but he gets Anne into his vehicle and he drives away. Now he is hitting her. He is punching her in the face until the point where she just blacks out. There was a witness named Janet Hadwiger, and she said to the 911 operator that the front passenger door was open and the girl was bracing herself not to go into the vehicle. She was really fighting back and he just kept hitting her maybe a dozen times. And another caller named Carrie Brand, she states to 911 that it was just frightful. Frightful screaming, and that when she turned to look where the screaming was coming from, she saw a man hitting a young girl, and he kept hitting her until he finally got her inside of this car, and he just drove off. Michael Bogart, a Kearney police officer, he arrives at the mall parking lot. Once he gets there, he finds Anne's belongings on the ground, right by her driver's side door to her vehicle. She had the music CD that she went to buy, her purse, which had her identification in it, and she also had a pair of mittens that were sitting on the ground. So Michael Bogart, he contacts Anne's parents to tell them, listen, we think your daughter was just assaulted and abducted in the mall parking lot. So police arrive at the Slutty's home, and this is where they set up a command post. Like, they have somebody there that is wiretapping the Slutty's phone just in case Anne calls, because they're thinking, okay, this is a total stranger abduction. And with a total stranger abduction, the person who was abducted is usually dead within 24 hours if they're not located. So they are on this as quick as possible. Now, there were so many witnesses in that mall parking lot that police were able to get a sketch of the suspect so quickly. So they have a sketch and they know that he is a big guy. He is really muscular, but they don't have a name. they don't have a suspect in mind because Anne didn't have a boyfriend. You know, she didn't have a significant other. She didn't have any enemies. No one knows who this man is. Anne has no idea who she is traveling with in this vehicle. This man has now chained Anne's hands behind her back. Then he had another chain to bind her feet, and he ordered her to remain on the floor of this Suburban. So she's crouched down, scared out of her mind. It's about 10:15 at night. They have driven from Kearney, Nebraska to Ainsworth, Nebraska within the past 3 hours or so. The two continue driving north from Ainsworth to Springview, Nebraska. While they're driving, he does tell Anne that his name is Tony. So she knows that her abductor's name is Tony, but that's all she knows. She doesn't know why he's doing this, what he wants from her. So this guy's driving a Suburban. Anne is tied up, chained up in the front seat. While they're driving down this road, he crashes the Suburban and lands in a ditch. He can't get the car out of the ditch. So he gets Anne out of the car. She's chained up still. He leaves her wrist chained, and they walk until they see this farmhouse. And then he cuts the phone lines in this farmhouse and he steals the family's pickup truck. And then he takes the pickup truck back to where his Suburban is in a ditch and he tries to pull out the Suburban with the pickup truck, but it doesn't work. So he takes the pickup truck and now he drives back into town and he finds a front end loader. And he steals that. He takes the front end loader and he gets the Suburban out of the ditch. I feel like it's at this point that Anne might have realized, yeah, I don't think I'm dealing with the smartest man here. So while Tony is really busy trying to figure out this Suburban situation, Anne is able to remove one of the chains that was on her wrist. And this is the first time that she starts leaving little breadcrumbs. So she throws this chain in a ditch, hoping that someone's going to find it. And somebody does. A neighbor who lived around that area found the chain and they took it to the sheriff's department. So who is Tony? Well, his real name is Anthony Stephen Wright, and he goes by the name Tony Zappa. Now, 6 years before he abducted Anne, he was in prison. And all he did in prison, day in and day out, was work out. So Tony was a big guy. Just as all of the witnesses said, he was extremely big and muscular. And why was he in prison 6 years ago? That was because he had a lot of burglaries on his rap sheet. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison for these burglaries, but he was released from prison after only 4 years. So his 15-year term didn't mean anything. And when he got out of jail, prison, after 4 years, he said, "I swear to God, I will never go back to prison ever again." So Anthony Stephen Wright had a horrific childhood. He was very much abused by his father, who was constantly drunk. They say that his father would berate him, talk down to him, tell him, you know, what a worthless piece of shit he was. Some people said his father could be really nice when he was sober, but he was barely ever sober. So Anthony grew up with this behavior. He watched his parents fighting constantly. He watched his dad yell at him and abuse him every day almost. So he believes as he's growing up, this is just how people behave. This is normal. And then as an adult, Tony, as he wanted to be known as, Tony Zappa, he just becomes this dangerous person, very violent, very confrontational. It's now the next day, April 7th, 2001. Anne and Tony are driving through South Dakota. They stop the Suburban in a field. This is when Tony uses duct tape to bind Anne's hands behind her back, and then he duct taped her legs together in several different places and blindfolded her. He tells Anne, "Listen, I'll make you a deal. If you can get the tape off, I'll let you go." Anne was going to go for it. She hopped over a barbed wire fence where she attempted to cut this tape off of her wrist. And instead, of course, she's using a barbed wire fence. She ends up cutting her wrist and her hand pretty badly. So she's now bleeding all over. She's trying to get Tony to help her to take this tape off of her body. It was on her body so tightly. She's begging him, please, can you please take the tape off? And his response is, no, you whine too much. This man starts trying to help her remove the tape, but he can't get it off. So he tries to use a lighter to burn the tape off of her. And of course, he ends up now burning her arm. Tony tells Anne he is taking her to a payphone. She is going to call a friend. He wants her to call one of her friends and not her parents and tell them that she's going away on a vacation. She's going to be gone for a while. So at this point, Anne's house, her parents' home, is filled with police. They're sitting there waiting for a phone call, but her parents are going crazy. You know, they can't handle the press in the yard. They can't handle the police in their home. They're hysterical. So a neighbor says, why don't you come to our house, get away from all of this for just a little bit. While they're gone, the police are still there waiting for the phone to ring. Anne doesn't call a friend from that payphone. She calls her own home because she's so smart. He said, call a friend, don't call your parents. Well, Tony doesn't know Anne's mother's name. So when somebody picks up the phone, it's not her parents. It's not her brother. She doesn't know the police are there, but she's smart enough to understand that they could be there. So somebody says, hello. And Anne says, can I talk to Elaine? Her mom's name. Then she says, do you know who this is? And the officer says, yes, I think I do. Is this Anne? And Anne says, yes. It is. She is so calm on these phone calls. Let me tell you, her voice remains completely chill, like nothing's going on. Now, Anne tries to stay on the phone as long as she can, but Tony hangs it up on her. He's like, I thought I told you that you were supposed to say you were going on a vacation. And so Anne was still able to very calmly tell the officer that she wasn't hurt. She hopes she can get home soon, but she better get off the phone. That's right before Tony hung the phone up on her. Tony still thinks she called a friend. So the police are so excited because Anne just called, but they couldn't trace the phone call. They were 2 seconds short before Tony hung up that phone. Tony gets really upset that Anne never mentioned the fact that she's going to be going on a vacation. So he tells her to call a different friend, and she calls her friend Janessa. So when Janessa asks her, where are you, Anne? Tony hung up the phone again, and they had nothing to go on again. On the morning of April 8th, 2001, Tony drove Anne to Livingston, Montana. Once they get to this location, a remote location, he again duct tapes Anne's legs, her wrist. He puts duct tape around her head, over her eyes, and he cuts her clothes off with a knife. Now, Anne is pleading with Tony, please do not do this to me. She knows what he's going to do. She's a virgin. She's 17 years old. She is begging with him, using the fact I'm a virgin, but Tony doesn't care. Tony rapes Anne that day on April 8th. And that is when he tells her, I'm taking you far away. You're going to be with me forever. This was my plan all along. I'm taking you into the woods, into the mountains, and I am going to rape you at least 4 times a day. I mean, how can Anne even comprehend this? This is a fucking nightmare. This man. Okay, so after all of this, he now takes Anne to a different cabin. He breaks into another cabin, and this cabin was owned by a man named Mark Wesson. He gets into this cabin, and he steals a 7.21 rifle from Mark's cabin. They take the rifle, and then they leave, and they break into another cabin that is nearby Mark's cabin. So while they're in this cabin, Tony goes upstairs, and this is when Anne sees that there is a telephone in the room. Tony tells her, don't you dare fucking move. You stay right here. Don't make a sound. I'll be right back. But she finds the telephone, and she calls 911. Anne's trying to be really discreet. She knows she doesn't have a lot of time. She turns the kitchen sink on, running the water so that Tony can't hear her. She dials 911. The operator comes on, and Anne says, are we in Montana? And you can hear this whole phone call on the show Deadly Demands, season 1, episode 6, which was my main source for this story. The operator is so kind to Anne. She says, yes, you're in Montana. Anne says, I need help. This is Anne Slutty. The operator says, do you know where you're at? She says, no. Who took you? And Anne says, his name is Tony, but I don't know his last name. This operator is asking, is he your boyfriend or something? Anne says, no, I have no idea who he is. He is a complete stranger and he is big and he is scary. And this is when Tony comes out from behind her and he's like, what are you doing? Did you call 911? He hangs up the phone on her and he loses his mind screaming at Anne and he grabs her. And now they have to leave this cabin. But what Tony's not understanding is that Anne is fighting back nonstop, even if he can't see it. She's always leaving a little breadcrumb trail. Anne will carve her initials into windowsills. Anne will write little notes in books in every cabin they're in. She's called 911 already. She's let someone know at her home that she's okay. Anne is always leaving a trail. And Tony has no idea. Tony is shoving Anne back into their vehicle, trying to drive away, yelling at her the whole time, asking her, why did you call the police? And he's saying things to her like, I might as well shoot you in the head right now. It's all over for you. And they take off so quick. By the time that a SWAT team arrives to this location, they're already gone. They still go into the cabin. They're looking around. They're searching the scene. And they start to realize that Anne left little clues. She etched her initials into the windowsill. And a lot of the cabins in that area were burglarized. They're talking to everyone in the neighborhood. They're canvassing. And they're finding out that neighbors were missing guns, knives, survival equipment. So they figure out, okay, these cabins, they're located on the edge of Yellowstone. They start to realize he's headed for the woods. He's headed for the mountains. And if that happens, how will we ever find this man? While police are searching this cabin, searching this neighborhood, Tony has driven Anne to Belgrade, Montana. When he arrives in Belgrade, he breaks into a woman's house named Anita Furman, ransacks the house, takes everything that he wants, and he rapes Anne a second time inside of this home. Then he brings Anne to a house next door to Anita's house. Now he knocks on the door, he's banging on the door, and this man named John Kuhn opens the door and he sees this young girl. She's got a black eye. Anne is beat up. Anne hasn't, you know, showered. She hasn't changed her clothes since April 6th. And this man is thinking, okay, this is weird. Hello, can I help you? Tony says, yeah, I'm looking for my friend. And he makes up some name of a guy. And this guy, John Kuhn, he's like, yeah, no, man, I'm sorry, but your friend doesn't live here. You got the wrong house. And they just walk away. But John, he calls 911 immediately, lets them know that something was off about this situation. Meanwhile, Tony and Anne are headed next door to John Kuhn's house to a home owned by Sean Swedecki. They break in to the Swedecki's home. They kick in the front door. And Tony kicks in the front door. He steals money from a piggy bank. He steals food stamps and he steals lingerie. Then he steals the Swedecki's blue Toyota Tercel and they leave the Suburban there. So 911 has been called from John Kuhn. They arrive and then they find out that his next door neighbor's car was also stolen, but the Suburban was left behind. So they're thinking, okay, great. We can get the VIN number and we can find out who this Suburban is registered to. Finally, we got our guy. But they were wrong. 8 days before kidnapping Anne, Tony was in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And he assaulted an elderly couple. He banged on their door. He asked to use their phone. The wife said no. And he broke in anyway. He pushed the wife out of the way. He assaulted her, punched her. Her husband tries to come to her rescue. These two are elderly. He punches the husband so hard that he dies of his injuries. He leaves those two laying on the floor. He goes outside and he steals their Suburban. So this Suburban was registered to that couple. At the same time, Tony is taking Anne to Salmon Lake, Montana, where there is a group of cabins. He forced his way into one of the cabins. They stayed in this cabin for the next 2 days. He removes the phone. You know, he smashes it so that Anne can't call 911 again. He also started getting rid of evidence. He burned the clothing that he cut off of Anne, and he rapes her again for a third time in the bedroom of this cabin. And now, knowing that Tony was destroying evidence, Anne is witnessing this. She had some semen-stained underwear, and she took those and she placed them into the kitchen trash can, hoping that somebody's going to find this as evidence. And not only that, Anne leaves two notes. She hid these notes inside of a paperback book, and the notes read, "Anne Slutty, 41001, help," in capital letters. And then she wrote, "I love my mom, dad, and brother." And she left this on the bookcase, hoping that the owners would find it. Whether she was found alive or found dead, she was going to get that note to her parents telling them that she loved them. She also left a note that said, "Anne Slutty was here, April 2001, and she left this note on a kitchen windowsill. Now, police are finding all of these clues, but they have no idea who this guy could be, and they are racking their brains. They're having meetings all day trying to figure it out, come up with any idea. And one police officer says, "Hey, what about the guy from the Mall of America?" So, 1 month before the abduction of Anne Slutty, in Iowa, Tony Zappa skipped out on two hearings and his bond was forfeited. So there were bounty hunters looking for him, and they found him. And he's confronted by these two bounty hunters, and he comes out guns blazing. These guys can't catch him. He escapes by stealing a car. So this was the beginning of Tony Zappa on the run. Now, Tony was always really good at escaping authority. He was just really slick and could get out of any situation. So after he took the bounty hunter's car, by the way. That's the car he stole. After he takes their car, he heads north. And it always feels like Tony Zappa is one step ahead of police, of bounty hunters. He's always one step ahead. So he escapes to St. Paul, Minnesota. And they couldn't catch him there. Then somebody spots Tony at the Mall of America, but they still can't catch him. And from there, it's car thefts, assaults. He's wanted in 5 states. He was so good at doing anything he had to do to avoid the police, to avoid going back to jail. So these officers are like, "Wait a minute. So who was the guy from the Mall of America?" Because these are two different states here. So they're trying to connect the dots. They realize his name is Tony Zappa, and they figure out that yes, Tony Zappa is the man that they are looking for. His real name is Anthony Stephen Wright. So Tony and Anne are in a new hideout when police figure this out. But while they're in their new cabin hiding out, Tony goes to the bathroom and Anne turns on the TV, and it's all over the news. Anthony Stephen Wright has kidnapped, abducted Anne Slutty. It's everywhere. Tony comes downstairs and he sees Anne watching this. Then he finds out that police are surrounding his area. The cabin that they're in right now, completely surrounded by police presence. Now, the area is surrounded. They don't know which cabin he's in yet. And you want to know what this fucker says to Anne? This is how much of a dangerous piece of shit this man is. He looks really upset. He's pissed. But he looks at Anne and he goes, "You know what? If we're going to get caught, we might as well have some fun." And he rapes her again. On April 11th, 2001, a neighbor spots the Toyota Tercel at the cabin at 835 Lakeshore Drive. They call the police, and a little after 5 o'clock p.m. on April 11th, police are blocking off roads leading to that cabin. Police SWAT teams, they surround the house, and they're trying to use a bullhorn to talk to Tony. And he realizes, okay, shit, this is it. I'm surrounded. We're done. Anne picks up the phone and she calls 911, and she is trying to help negotiate her own release without even being told to do it. And she is again remaining completely calm on this 911 call. She calls. She says, "Hello, this is Anne Sluti. I've been abducted." She says, "They have our house. It's surrounded. I'm asking you, don't hurt anyone." And she also asks them, she's like, "Can you quit bothering us from outside? You have officers outside on bullhorns and they keep saying the same thing over and over, and it is getting him upset. You need to stop doing that." And they agree. They're like, "Okay, we'll talk to the officers. We'll get everything figured out." And Anne says, "Please tell them not to shoot. If anyone comes in, do not shoot at him. Don't." And she says that very clearly. Don't. Anne begs Tony to get on the phone and please talk to this undersheriff himself. And he says he can't. He's saying, "No, I can't do it." You can hear him in the background of the call. But then Tony gets on the call. And I'm telling you, this man who has terrorized this 17-year-old child here sounds like a little baby. He sounds so scared. It's crazy to think that he did all of this stuff when that voice is coming out of him now. He's like, tell them not to hurt me. Fucking little bitch, you know? He sounds like a child. Anne exits the cabin first. She has her hands up, and the minute she gets outside, she jumps straight into the sheriff's arms. She's hysterical. She's so happy that she is saved. And then Tony comes out, and he immediately lays down on the ground. Anne is saved. She's saved, and she gets to go home, and she gets to see her family, and she arrives by plane to this airport, and outside of the airport, there is an entire parade of people just standing at the airport cheering for her the moment she gets off of that airplane, and she just says, "I'm just so glad to be home." Anthony Stephen Wright, a.k.a. Tony Zappa, was convicted of kidnapping and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Anne Sluti graduated from the Rose Hulman Institute of Technology, where she earned a degree in engineering, and lives in Indiana, where she works as an engineer. It's a career that fits her matter-of-fact personality, according to an NTV article. Anne's father, Don, spoke with NTV, and he said, "She didn't go through counseling, nor did we. She says, 'Why would I talk to a stranger about something that happened to me?'" And Don and Elaine, her parents, said they don't think about what happened. They don't waste time thinking about Tony Zappa. Her mother, Elaine, added, "I went through an angry period, a very short one. I went through a lot of emotions. When it all comes out, I have decided that I don't want to be a hateful, bitter woman." Anne's father, Don, said that Anne only worried that people will now identify her as a victim, and she doesn't want that. She says, "No, I want my life." Anne Sluti, you are no victim. You are a survivor. You are a badass. Stay safe and stay paranoid.